The following is an encore episode of Hour 1 of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
You've tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect respectfully. Now, time to get tuned into the frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
And welcome to the Turley Frequency this Tuesday morning. You are never so welcome as you are on a Tuesday morning here on the Turley Frequency. Now today on the show we meet the lawyer and author John Birch, and he will be telling us how to navigate our way out of gender confusion into the light of truth. We speak with John in the next segment. Top of the hour, we, as always, are going to pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet. And guess what? You're invited to join us. That's right. Feel free to text me your prayer requests on 251-928-2111. The lines are open for you right now. In the final segment today, we find out what it's like to be one of the country's top investigative journalists with the New York Post's Isabel Vincent. Sounds interesting? Well, you're going to have to stick around till the last segment to find out more. Okay, with all this good stuff, I guess we'd better get this show on the road. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome, one and all, to this morning's edition of the Turley Frequency. Somebody asked me why you have an explosion at the start of your show every day. And I said, well, that's a sort of a nod to my childhood growing up in Northern Ireland, where there was explosions all the time. It reminds me of those fond childhood days. Believe that and you believe anything, right? Anyway, welcome. Now, yesterday, if you were listening to the show, you would have heard our wonderful friend Richard Cuddle on the show. Richard is a prayer warrior, one of the growing body of the army of Archangel Radio's prayer warriors who come in each day and pray for you live on air. Richard's been doing it for quite a few months now, and I really enjoy being with him live on air. He's in the studio in Alabama, and I'm sat here. But it's almost like we're together. It really does feel that. The 3,000-4,000 miles in between seems to shrink as we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet together. Now, Richard brought up a topic yesterday, which really stuck with me overnight. Now, if you listen to the show, you remember that most of his intentions that we prayed for were all for his friends. And Richard is one of those lucky men who's blessed with the gift of friendship. Because Richard has an awful lot of friends by the sounds of things. Richard, if you're listening this morning, by the way, good morning to you and to all your friends scattered throughout Lower Alabama and beyond. So it stuck in my mind overnight. And guess what? When I opened up the news threads this morning to start to look around for something to talk about on the show, what's been in the press today? Now, I know Reed alerted us yesterday to the fact there's no coincidence on this show, and there absolutely is not. Yesterday, we were talking about the woke agenda. Do you remember with Theresa? How to woke-proof your life. I still love that title. It's great. I'm thinking of setting up a woke watch on this show. What do you reckon? We'll have Theresa back on a regular basis, patrolling the byways and the highways, looking for wokery wherever we can find it. Could be fun. Could be a laugh. And that's why you need to treat some of this stuff with a belly laugh, a good laugh, because it's ridiculous, right? Children saying they're cats, adults saying they're dogs. It's raining cats and dogs in all the wrong places. But anyway, So today we're talking gender confusion. If that wasn't bad enough, now I don't know about you, my head starts to spin when the subject of gender confusion, gender identity, whatever they're calling it these days. I mean, I can still remember saying to my mother, maybe I was about 3 or 4, 5 or 6, I can't remember exactly. What's the difference between boys and girls, I said. And my mother, probably rightly, you know, a good Christian mother, not wanting to sort of break innocence too early, she said, well, boys wear trousers and girls wear skirts or dresses. And I thought, yeah, you're right, Mom. You're absolutely right. That's exactly the difference between us. And girls didn't play football in those days, soccer. They did not play soccer. They were always complaining when in the school yard we played soccer because they wanted to play on their ropes and their swings and whatever, whatever. We're going back ancient history now, ancient history. Those days have changed. Anyway, so I knew from a very early age what a woman was or what a girl was. And then as I grew up, we had biology lessons at school. I'm sure you did. And we said, hey, that's what a woman is, and that's what a man is. And it's very obvious, right? Not wishing to go into any details at this time of the morning, but it's pretty clear who's who, right? Especially if you're at a boys' boarding school, as I was. There were no girls there. That's because we all had to shower together after the sports. And I can assure you, everybody was definitely male. So anyway, enough of this, enough of this. So we're dealing this week with, obviously, with this wokery, gender confusion, all the stuff that's forever in the news. But I'll give you this, my point of view, and it's this. I'm beginning to find it a bit tedious for the reasons I've just said, because it is so patently obvious to most ordinary, sensible, sane human beings what the difference is. Now, of course, there has always been one or two people where there is a little bit of gender confusion for a variety of reasons, but I'm not getting into that now. We'll talk about that in the next segment with our guest, who will hopefully shed some light on that rather strange topic. Back to Richard, our wonderful prayer warrior yesterday, talking about friendships. And anyway, this morning on the news, it's all about friendships. So that's obviously one of the themes this week that we're going to be given by the Holy Spirit as it leads us, you and me, through this week here live on Archangel Radio. So friendships are in the news because for men in particular, this is interesting, there is what's known as a friendship recession. Now, if it wasn't bad enough that there's recessions in the economy, work recessions, all the rest of it, we've now got friendship recession to deal with as well. So what's that? Well, it's the general trend since the pandemic. It was there before, but it's certainly accelerated since the pandemic. It's come out in a number of studies, one of which I'm going to refer to in a minute, which basically say that most men are either losing friends, not retaining friends, or are preferring to be on their own. There's a headline in a British newspaper this morning where a woman says, I'm very angry with my husband. I thought, oh yes, what's that about? And it's because he won't sort of go out and spend time with his male friends. She sees this as some sort of problem for him. Now, it's kind of interesting to start to look into that because it must be admitted that the pandemic definitely did shake up our friendships. I'm sure you'll agree. I, like everybody else, there were friendships that were strengthened because of the pandemic. But there were also friendships which just kind of drifted away. I'm sure I'm not the only person who sometimes looks at their phone and says, at the name saying, who is that again? Why is that name on my phone? Do you know what was really embarrassing the other day? Do you know the way sometimes when you put your headphones on, I don't know. I haven't worked this out. Now, I'm pretty good with most of the equipment I use, but this I haven't worked out. So there's this sort of headset you get. It's a Bluetooth to your phone, and it does it occasionally. And what it does is you put it on, you accidentally press a part of it, and it starts making a telephone call, right? Ever had this happen to you? It's happened to me twice. It happened the other day, and the name that flashed up was somebody on my in my contacts, who I couldn't remember who they were. And at this point in time, I was now phoning them. How embarrassing that would have been. The other time it happened was I had to have somebody's contacts for a news article I was writing, and it was a lord of a manor out in the wilds of England, rather grand individual. And he had given me his telephone number in great secrecy because of some article I was writing or something. Anyway, accidentally, I sat on the phone one day and ended up phoning him. Try explaining that to the third lord of wherever it was. So, friendships. Even looking down the list of your contacts, you think, oh yeah, who was that again? That shows that some of our friendships have disappeared in the last few years. Now, I don't particularly get bothered about this because I've always been somebody who friends come, friends go. That's just the way life is. It's a wonderful quote I came across. I forget who said it. I think it's gone through a number of formulations. But it's basically that friends are given for three reasons. They're either given for a reason, for a season, or for life. Now, let's think of that in reverse order. Given for a reason. Now, we've all had situations at work, for example, where you can have very intense working relationships with people. And they can be really, really positive. And I've worked in situations where we've had great times working with colleagues at work. We've never socialized outside work. I've known nothing, very little about their private lives other than what they've told me. And yet the intensity of the job we're on makes the friendship very, very real. But the minute you leave work, you ever found this? The minute you left work and you tried to meet with them again and there was nothing to talk about. It's almost like the friendship just sort of melted away. And it's not because there's any ill will on either part. Not at all. It's just one of those things that just naturally dies. So there's a reason, and then there's a season. Now, a season is probably something a little bit longer than just a work episode of some sort. So a season might be, for example, that intense friendship you have during adolescence, early 20s, during your university years, that sort of thing. You can have really intense friendships. But then real life kicks in, and before you know it, friendships disappear. Often those friendships, and we've talked about this on the show, are based on geography, right? When you're growing up, your friend tends to live next door or down the street or in the same town, village, whatever. That's because you're a child. You can't get into a car and drive 30 miles for a meetup. So friendships are very sort of place specific. Similarly, universities, people have very intense friendships because you're all at the same university, you're all away from home, that sort of thing. Or if you go into the military, I guess it must be the same, or you're working on board a ship somewhere, similar type of intense friendships. And they can be for a season, part of growing up, part of getting older, part of maturing in some ways. And then there's other friendships, friendships that people have because of their children. Their children become friends of other children, and then the parents end up becoming friends. Or you become friends within a parish. This has happened often to me. And you're living in that parish for a number of years, and you're very friendly with the priests and your other parishioners. And then you move to another parish, and it slowly just sort of fades away. Not always. Maybe the intensity of it lessens. Maybe the frequency that you see people lessens. But the friendship definitely goes through a change. And then there are those very few friendships that we have for life. And if you have a friendship for life, consider yourself lucky. And if you're a man who has a friendship for life, consider yourself triply blessed. Now, I have some friends that I've had for many, many decades, and they are very, very good friends, and I rely on them 100%. But I know I'm the exception, right? There's other friends that I've had for many, many decades, and I'm beginning to wonder, why are we friends? That's a different story. But it made me wonder about what the nature of friendship is. Now, friendship is not about not being alone. And a lot of the articles that I've been looking at are all sort of lamenting the fact that people are spending more time on their own. Well, do you know what? It might be a bad thing that they're spending time on their own. They may be reflecting on their lives. They may be reading good material, literature about life and its meaning. Or heaven forbid, they may be praying to the Lord, speaking to the one who will never let us down. Let me give you a quote from St. Maximilian Kolbe, patron saint of journalists, no less. God sends us friends to be our firm support in the whirlpool of struggle. In the company of friends, we will find strength, to attain our sublime ideal. Now, I think there's a lot in that. We need friends. The Bible's very clear about how friends can support each other. But as with St. Maximilian Kolbe, the Bible is very clear as to why we have friends. Do you remember that quote I gave you the other day from St. Thomas More? You can go to hell on your own, but you can only go to heaven with others. Maybe that's why we really need friends. Not because they reaffirm our political views, our social views, or because they like cars like we do, or they like certain sports, or they like certain food, or whatever it happens to be. It's because they want to get us to heaven, and we want to return the compliment. That's it. Listen to what St. John Bosco, that wonderful apostle with young, listen to what he had to say about bad friends, bad companions. Now, he worked with the youth. He knew a lot about this. He said, "Fly from bad companions as from a bite from a poisonous snake. If you keep good companions, I can assure you that you will one day rejoice with the blessed in heaven. Whereas if you keep with those who are bad, you will become bad yourself, and you will be in danger of losing your soul." Now, I don't need to tell any of the parents out there how much, like a hawk, you watch the companions and the friends that come into the orbit of your children. Because we do know that good friends can really enhance a child's development, but we also know that bad company can completely corrupt it, destroy it even. As adults, we know that. We've had some experience of that. Toxic friends, I think they're called in the lingo these days. We've all had experience of toxic friends. And you know what you need to do with a toxic friend? Stay well away. Toxic friends have no interest in you. They have an interest in using you, but they have no interest in what's really your best needs, which is to get to heaven. Listen, am I talking to myself? What do you think? Call me, 888-928-0881, or text me on 251-928-2111. If you're a friend of Richard Cottle, phone in and tell me why he's such a good friend. That would be a good example to all of us. Let's keep going with these saints' quotes. "A tree is known by its fruits, a man by his deeds. A good deed is never lost. He who sows courtesy reaps friendship. He who plants kindness gathers love." St. Basil, famous church father of the early centuries. Friendships are about courtesy, kindness, generosity. Let's examine our friendships this day through that lens, through that prism of the gospel. Are we really helping each other to get to heaven? Are we helping each other to carry our crosses? Are we urging each other on to be better people? Or are we saying to our friends, "You're okay the way you are. God loves you the way you are." No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. If that was the case, why did he send his only son to redeem you, to save you, if you were fine as you were? That's nonsense. That's total nonsense. Hello. So we have a caller. Somebody wants to call in. Maybe it's a friend of mine calling in to say, "Hey, why don't you ever call me?" Let's find out who's on the line.
Yes, Kevin, here they are.
Hello, caller. You're on line one.
Good morning, Kevin.
Who have we got?
This is Jennifer in Lower Alabama.
Jennifer, hi. How are you doing?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Jennifer, you sound to me like a woman who has lots of friends.
I have been blessed with many, many friends. Many friends all over the world, Kevin. I've been very blessed.
You know, Jennifer, there's something about your voice which is very, very familiar, and I just can't put my finger on it.
I don't know. I don't know if we've met before. Have you been down to Mobile, Alabama?
Only in my dreams, Jennifer, only in my dreams.
Well,
so listen, tell me, what brings you to town? Do you live in Alabama now?
No, I am visiting family here. I live in Atlanta, Georgia, and I am visiting family here that have been in Mobile for many, many years. So we're down here, and we're looking for crabs this morning on the beach, and there are none. So we're just going to go for a walk.
Well, it's really nice for you to take time from your mansion up there in Atlanta, the antebellum mansion, and come down and crab search down here in Alabama. Listen, I know a lot about Atlanta. I've seen Gone with the Wind at least twice.
Oh, well, you know, I live just next door, Kevin.
You live in Big Tara.
I live in North Atlanta, and I have a family. I have two beautiful teenagers and a husband, and we live in Atlanta and just love it.
So tell me this, Jennifer, your husband, is he suffering from friendship recession?
Well, interestingly enough, Kevin, he is from New Zealand, and so he did not grow up in the U.S. and didn't grow up in Atlanta, obviously. But he has friends from New Zealand that he's known playing cricket since he was a little boy. And we were just visiting New Zealand. And those friendships are as tight and strong as they ever have been. And
wow.
I don't know. You don't meet a lot of men that have the strength of those friendships their whole life. And it's really neat how they care for each other. Really, really neat.
Can I ask you a personal question, Jennifer?
Sure, Kevin, go.
How do you find the New Zealand accent?
Oh, if I even tried to impersonate a New Zealand accent, I might be shot. I don't know. They might take the stamp off my passport.
Listen, Jennifer, I hear the music, which means we've got to get out of here. Listen, it's been great fun.
Why
speaking
you
to you. Call us again.
Bye,
sometime while you're on holiday down here in Alabama from the great state of Georgia. Wonderful to have you on board. That was Jennifer calling in from a beach somewhere in Alabama. When we come back, we are going to be talking gender identity, gender confusion, and everything in between. Stay tuned to the Charlie Frequency. You're live and exclusive on Archangel Radio.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure. That's what friends are for.
Welcome back to Charlie Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. It's great to have your company here this morning. Now, as I was saying in the last segment, yesterday we spoke with Teresa Mull about how to woke-proof your life. Do you remember? Well, today we are about to speak with our next guest on a subject which has become as omnipresent as it is, I'm afraid, tedious. Tedious for many of us who, as I said earlier, understand biological reality from an early age. John J. Birch serves as a vice president of appellate advocacy for the Alliance Defending Freedom, better known to many of us as ADF, which is the largest public interest law firm in the world, defending religious liberty, free speech, parental rights, marriage and family, and of course, the right to life. Now, John has argued 12 cases in the U.S. Supreme Court, yeah, including cases defending the Catholic Church's teaching around marriage and sexuality. His soon-to-be-published book from Sophia Institute Press is called Loving God's Children, the Church and Gender Ideology. And he joins me down the line this morning. John, welcome to the Charlie Frequency.
Thank you, and good morning to you.
John, where to start with all of this gender ideology? Am I the only one that's sort of scratching his head a lot of the time, wondering where did this all come from? 4 years ago, nobody talked about this, and now every single news bulletin seems to have it. What happened?
Well, it was actually a planned social attack. You'll remember that back in 2015, the U.S. Supreme Court was getting ready to release its opinion in Obergefell, the same-sex marriage case. And the court was widely expected to recognize same-sex marriage as a constitutional right, despite the Constitution's silence about that. And it eventually did that in June. But in the meantime, they were preparing to add the T, the transgender, to LGBT, with a massive media blitz. They'd already started a television show for kids called I Am Jazz, about a young boy who transitioned to a girl. And in that critical summer of 2015, Bruce Jenner, the former Olympian, was coming out as Caitlyn Jenner, a transgender woman. And that media blitz happened immediately after the opinion released in Obergefell. And since then, there's been a steady drumbeat, both on TV shows and in the movies, but especially on social media, just absolutely a tidal wave of content on YouTube and TikTok and Instagram, encouraging kids to identify as a gender which is different than their sex. And it just seems to get more pervasive every week.
I get that. I get the idea that there's been a kind of an agenda. But let's go back a little bit, because you must have studied this, John. You must have looked into this. You must have been aware of it, given your work in the legal sphere. Who orchestrates these campaigns? Who sits down somewhere in some smoke-filled room and says, this is our agenda? I mean, how does it come about?
That's a great question. Yeah, to go back a really long time, it wasn't a smoke-filled room. It was a doctor's office, basically. And it started with a psychologist. His name was John Money. And ironically, given how much money flows to gender clinics today. And it started with a pair of twins, two boys. And one of them had a botched circumcision. And the doctors weren't sure what to do about that. And so they decided to have him present as a girl. You know, this was when he was a baby. He didn't know anything about this. And so then John Money studied those twins over the ensuing years and tried to make the case that there was a gender that was distinct from your sex. Now, the twins would later report that many of those studies, that research that John Money did, was filled with all kinds of inappropriate, highly sexualized conduct that the doctor made them engage in. I mean, it was purely sexual abuse.
What year are we talking here, John, roughly?
This is back in the 1960s, roughly.
Of course.
And so
when
yeah,
else?
Exactly.
About the same time that Kinsey was coming out with his flawed stuff.
Right, exactly. You know, and so then all of a sudden you had this body of research which justified this separate notion of a gender identity. So, you know, it kind of percolates along quietly for a few years. But then the folks in the movement decide that they can take this and attach it to the LGB. And so what you really see in the last 10 years or so is the ACLU, the Human Rights Campaign, the Southern Poverty Law Center, Lambda Legal, you know, all these left-wing organizations that are very vocal on this issue, and they start to infiltrate the medical organizations. And so all of a sudden now the American Medical Association and the pediatricians and things like that, you know, all start come out in favor of affirmation. And then it spreads to the politicians, and then it spreads to the mainstream media, you know, and pretty soon you've got this crescendo. Well, meanwhile, over in Europe, there's a similar trajectory that's taking place. UK, Sweden, Finland, you know, they're all kind of on the cutting edge of affirmation when it comes to gender identity, early use of puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones and even surgery. But then the United States and those other countries start to diverge a couple of years ago. In the United States, they continue to push these things. All of a sudden now Planned Parenthood clinics all across the country are giving gender blockers and diagnosing gender dysphoria. And increasingly encouraging kids to affirm their gender identity at younger and younger ages. But in the UK and Finland and Sweden and those other countries, which had all been very supportive of the whole gender identity movement, they say, hold on, wait a minute. We're starting to see the results of our long-term studies now, and we're seeing no improvement in the mental health outcomes of the kids that are going through all these invasive medical treatments. In fact, it might be making things worse. And so now all of a sudden, in the last 1 to 2 years, you see all of those countries putting a huge halt on the use of puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones for minors. But in the United States, we charge blindly ahead. And it's no secret that if you're a gender clinic, that you can get up to $70,000 for performing a gender surgery. And so now you've got this evil marriage in the United States between the activists on one hand and the doctors on the other hand, who see a money train here. So ironically, it all starts with John Money all those decades ago, and it ends with money here today. And the United States is quickly becoming an outlier in the world when it comes to the way that it treats transgender dysphoria.
You can tell why my guest is a top lawyer, because he summed up a very complex subject beautifully there, as if you're standing in front of one of the Supreme Court justices. That was wonderful, John. You're listening to the voice of John Birch, who is the author. He's a lawyer, but he's also the author of the soon-to-be-released Loving God's Children, The Church and Gender Ideology, which will be published by Sophia Institute Press next month. John, that's a very helpful historical odyssey through how we've ended up in these odd times that we live in. But gender ideology seems to be embedded now, like a lot of other ideologies of this nature, in academia, in the political world, in social service constructions of whatever sort we want. Is that the case? I mean, is this something which is here to stay, or is there the possibility that this is rather faddish?
Well, I certainly hope it's faddish, because, you know, as we've learned from those European friends of ours, the best long-term studies available show that affirming kids to embrace a transgender identity and then to go all the way through surgery does not have a good long-term outcome for their health. If we want to truly love people, which is not to give them what they want or make them feel good about themselves, but instead to do everything that we can to make sure that what's best for them is done, then certainly pursuing this transgender ideology is not what's best for kids or grownups for that matter. And I don't think that we're on a path where it's so embedded in our culture that it's irreversible. But it does require the church and families, especially parents, to step in and to start to turn that tide. Now, publicly, you can see some of that happening already. These Save Women's Sports bills, which are now in place in 22 states, I believe, they protect the right of women and girls to be able to compete only against women and girls and not boys who identify as girls. You know, you probably heard about in Connecticut, the two boys identifying as girls who took 15 state championships in track and field races. Now, of course, you got the NCAA swimmer, you know, who was a mediocre at best male swimmer, and then all of a sudden won the national title in the women's swimming meet, beating two women Olympians in the process. You know, so it starts with sports. And now we see a number of states that are starting to outlaw the gender, the cross-sex hormones and the puberty blockers for minors. They're following the path of those European allies. And of course, they're immediately getting pushback, but they've been standing strong in the face of that. And in the meantime, the church is starting to get its voice on this. As I discussed at length in the book, Pope Francis has been very outspoken about the dangers of gender ideology. He understands that we are not souls trapped in a body, and that somehow those two things are separate, kind of like the second century Gnosticism that the church has had to stamp out over and over again. But instead, that we are embodied souls, that our soul or our bodies say something about who we are. To be male or female is a distinct gift. It makes us unique. It's the way God created us, and we should embrace that. And so based on some of those things that he said, and an important document that came from the Vatican about gender ideology and Catholic education, now American bishops are starting to come out in force. And almost every couple of months now, you're seeing another letter or document or statement from American bishops where they're reaffirming that we are created as embodied souls, that we cannot reject our sex because it is a gift from God, and all the consequences that flow from that in the way that we should be treating young people in our churches, our Catholic schools, in our families, and in society. So there's still hope for us to turn the tide back, but it's going to take a lot of work, a lot of prayer by many, many people coming together.
Okay, John, we're going to pause it there for a second. We're going to go take some commercials, and then we'll come straight back. You're listening to John Birch, lawyer, author. We're talking about gender ideology in the church this morning, and it's very, very interesting what John has to say. Okay, you're listening also to The Turley Frequency. To me, your host, Kevin Turley, and we'll be back straight after these words. Stay tuned to The Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. and welcome back to Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I'm in discussion this morning with John Birch, who is a lawyer and also an author. He's written Loving God's Children, The Church and Gender Ideology. John, just for the break, you were talking about some of the pushback from the church, and we'll get into that a little bit more and what your book has to say. But it's very interesting. I don't know if this is happening in the States, but certainly in the UK, there's definitely a pushback, but it's coming from sort of unexpected sources. I'm talking about feminists and sort of lesbian groups and that sort of thing. They're the people that are really pushing back. And also the whole area of women's sports. People are up in arms about this invasion of women's sports by people who aren't women. Is this happening in the States? Is there this kind of groundswell of opinion that this is somehow just not right?
Well, we're certainly seeing it in sports. You know, sometimes people are uncomfortable confronting the issue of gender ideology when it comes to high school locker rooms and showers and things like that, or even college dormitories, you know, certainly in the workplace and all that. But everybody can look at the track or a swimming pool and see the male identifying as female finishing laps, you know, or a half mile in front of all the female competitors and say, that's not fair. That's not right. That's not at all what the federal law, Title IX, that created the women's sports movement in the United States in the 1970s was supposed to accomplish. So you can really see it in the sports. And now there's multiple famous athletes across the United States and around the world who speak on this regularly. Among the feminists, you are starting to see a push there too, because they recognize that if anyone by just declaration can become a woman, I'm a woman, so now I'm a woman, that what that does is it erases women. And it's not just in sports where women are erased. People might be surprised to learn that the number one ranked woman all time on the Jeopardy quiz show on television is actually a man who identifies as a woman. So men identifying as women take not only spots on the podium and, you know, in finals races and things like that for athletic competitions, but they also take other spaces that are supposed to be reserved for women. And if you're a true feminist, one who wants to uphold the feminine genius and recognize that men and women are equal, you have to push back on this, because otherwise men just take over the field.
Absolutely. I should have asked before we started, John, how you were identifying this morning. Forgive me in case I mispronounced you. But in some ways, what we're dealing with here is something which you as a lawyer deal with all the time, because every single court case is about trying to get to the truth of the matter, right? And there's an element of objective truth being kicked into touch in this whole debate, or am I reading it wrong?
No, you're reading it exactly right. It all comes down to truth. And in fact, the first chapter of the book touches on the subject of truth, because it's so important to get that right before you can even have a discussion about gender ideology. There is a massive movement in the United States right now and in other parts of the world, too, especially among young people, to follow moral relativism, that what's true for you is true for you and what's true for me is true for me. And you can hear that with our Catholic young people, you know, even if they're strongly pro-life, where they might say, well, I would never have an abortion because I think that's the taking of an innocent life. But that's my truth. I would never impose my truth on somebody else. When in fact, we should be able to recognize that truth is truth for everybody in all times, everywhere. It's something objective that can be discerned through rational thought and through guidance from the church and from church documents. You know, so we start with the truth that we are all created male and female. And Pope John Paul II spoke beautifully about this in his Theology of the Body. Why is it that we're created male and female? Well, it's because the man, Adam, when he was originally created, was alone. And he needed a helpmate. An azer was the Hebrew word. And a helpmate is not someone who's just there to assist you, like an assistant or a secretary. It's someone who is indispensable to helping you reach your full potential. God himself is referred to as a helpmate, as an azer in the Old Testament, numerous times. And so that's when God creates Eve, because among all the animals and the creatures that God had created, none of them was that suitable helpmate, that person to help Adam come to his fullness, to be the best possible version of himself. And then Adam and Eve come together, and in their nakedness, they can immediately see God's design for the body, that men and women were meant to be complementary, that they were to go together. And Adam says, at last, this is flesh of my flesh and bone of my bone. And so then Adam and Eve have the very first marriage. And out of their love, which is so strong, grows a third person, you know, a son, and then a second son. And as Christopher West explains it, drawing on that theology of the body, it's when man and woman come together in marriage and create a child that we become icons of the Trinity, and where the love between God and Jesus is so strong, it proceeds from them as the Holy Spirit, a whole independent person. And so you can see in human sexuality and the creation of male and female, the beauty of God's design, because it helps us to love, it helps us to look towards the other and will what's best for them, but it also helps us to better understand God in his Trinitarian nature itself. And so we need that type of truth, and it's truth that's backed up by theology, it's backed up by what our eyes see when we're looking at a sports race, and it's backed up by the best science that we have on these things, which says definitively that there is no such thing as a man born in a woman's body or vice versa. But it all comes down to truth and being able to find it, and there's just a lack of curiosity about the truth anymore. Everyone just wants to let everyone decide for themselves who they are and what they want to be, and that's not the way the world works.
Absolutely, and I think you've beautifully linked there the wonderful theology of the body of John Paul II, which has been so instrumental and informative for a whole generation in the culture of death that we're surrounded by, and how it all just beautifully fits. You know, the answer is so simple. And it's so sort of foundational. But to answer me this, because you've made me wonder again, John, you know, when you're talking about objective truth, I'm always reminded of the patron saint of those who don't believe there's objective truth, which is, of course, Pontius Pilate. But when did this retreat from objective truth, when did it start? You know, in the same way that we can link a lot of things to the 60s and various ideologies, can you pinpoint a point in the legal world or maybe in socio-political realm where suddenly objective truth became something wholly subjective?
Well, I would say, speaking socio-politically, that it begins in the 1980s. And you might remember that we had this movement of political correctness, where all of a sudden we were guarding our language and changing the words that we used and excising some words from our vocabulary entirely because we didn't want to offend anyone. And that's a good instinct. We don't want to intentionally harm people or make them feel bad. I mean, that is a Christian ethic, one that we should all embrace. But you can carry it too far, and that's exactly what's happened. As people get more drawn into this notion of not ever offending anyone, all of a sudden it becomes offensive to share the truth. And so when I tell someone about the truth of human life beginning at conception and that abortion is wrong, well, that could hurt somebody who's had an abortion and doesn't want to feel bad that they took the life of their child. If I talk about the beauty of marriage between one man and one woman, the way that God created it, then someone who has a same-sex attraction and is in a same-sex relationship might feel bad because it seems like I'm criticizing their marriage and saying that it's not what God's plan is for their best flourishing. And then similarly, when you talk about gender ideology, if I don't use preferred pronouns, if I refuse to recognize that someone has a gender identity that's different than their biological sex, then they might feel bad about that. And so this concern about feeling, making others feel bad, turns into this moral relativism where I just kind of hold my views and opinions to myself and everything becomes a matter of opinion. You know, I like chocolate ice cream the best. You might like vanilla ice cream the best. And there's nothing wrong with your choice because my preference for chocolate ice cream is just that. It's a preference. It's not an eternal truth that says anything about how we should live our lives. But when we're talking about things like abortion, like same-sex marriage, like gender ideology, these are eternal truths that do matter because they cause real harm to people. And it's easy for us to forget in the midst of our carefulness about language and not offending anyone that bad ideas wound people. You know, it's the bad idea of abortion that not only results in the loss of a child's life, but also results in the permanent mental health damage to the mother. Who, whether she realizes it in the moment or not, has taken the life of her own child. And similarly, when we affirm someone by using pronouns or preferred titles, allowing them to use the opposite sex's privacy facilities, letting them dress like the opposite sex and so on, we are setting them down a path where they're going to be struggling with mental health issues for the rest of their life. And there's nothing simple about these medical procedures that we've been talking about either. You know, these things will result in permanent infertility and in bone loss and in higher rates of suicide and, you know, all kinds of terrible consequences. So it's important as a Catholic community that we reject this idea of moral relativism, recognize that there is an eternal truth, because going down that road of not offending people actually results in harming them. And for a parent, it would be easy to understand this. They think about a child who desperately wants to touch a hot stove. That's what they really, really want. Well, no parent would give in to that because they know better than the child that if they touch a hot stove, they're going to get burned. They're going to get hurt. And so that's why it's important that we proclaim the truth and not just give in to satisfying people's desires not to be bothered or to have hurt feelings.
Absolutely. And I think it's very important, just listening to you, John, it's very important that we're not proclaiming, you're not proclaiming your truth as opposed to somebody else's truth. The opposite of truth is, I'm afraid, lies.
That's absolutely right. And the lie of gender ideology is what's pushing this movement forward. And they try to get all of us to participate in it with the things like the preferred pronouns and wear the ally pin and things like that. But, you know, as soon as you start using the preferred pronouns, then you're giving into the lie. And that lie will take that person down a path which is going to be highly destructive to their future happiness and well-being.
Not just their future well-being, but society's as well. I mean, are you hopeful? I mean, you're a lawyer, you're in the courts, you're battling on these different questions. I mean, are you hopeful that the United States in particular can move in a different way? If you look at the trajectory of the last number of decades, it's not particularly hopeful.
Well, I've always got hope because I have my hope in Jesus Christ. So I know no matter how much the culture is falling, that there is still hope. I do see signs in our legal system of good things happening. Regrettably, the gender ideology subject now takes up a majority of my docket as a religious liberty and free speech lawyer, because it's bringing people into conflict in so many different instances. Whether it's the ability of a college professor to speak freely about someone's sex by not using preferred pronouns, or whether it's those female athletes who are fighting against male athletes who are coming in and winning all their races. You know, we're seeing this conflict everywhere, but we are seeing victories. But the important thing to remember is not to put our hope in courts, even our Supreme Court, which has done a lot of good over the last 10 years in this space. It's not to put our hope in politicians, even though we have states now which are doing everything they can to protect minors from these invasive medical treatments and surgeries. But it's to put our hope in Christ. And all we have to do is go back and read the Old Testament, and we can see many, many, many examples where the people fell away from the truth. They fell away from God. They engaged in child sacrifice and all kinds of other horrible practices. And God was always faithful. They just needed to go back to him because he's just waiting there to love them, wants them to return. And I see that's where we are right now, too. And that doesn't mean it's going to be easy. Certainly speaking about these issues publicly to family, friends, neighbors, fellow employees and things like that is hard. But God never promised that it would be easy. In fact, Jesus repeatedly in the Gospels tells us that those who follow him and try to proclaim God's kingdom here on earth will be persecuted and treated shabbily. And I've certainly seen plenty of evidence of that. But we need to keep speaking the truth, because if we don't, then who will? And if not us, then that truth will never get to the people who most need to hear it.
Amen. And I think the ADF, certainly ADF International, I know your colleagues over this side of the Atlantic, and they are very, very active on every single front, and they are a really inspirational bunch of lawyers. But I've got to ask you this. We're up against the clock a little bit, John, so you might have to be succinct. If it was a court of law, you'd have to sum up. But what's it like appearing as a lawyer in front of the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court?
It's a great honor. You walk into that courtroom where so much history has been made in our country, and you've got these nine people in black robes coming out, and they ask such good questions. They're so smart. It's really an honor. It's a blessing to be able to argue in front of them. But when I think about this issue of gender ideology, you know, what I hope is that this book and these conversations will spur many, many people to want to be lawyers, in the sense that they can go out and have these conversations, not with justices or lower court judges, but with everyday people, especially with their kids, and speak the truth to them, because that's what's going to ultimately turn this tide. It's not going to be the legal battles, as important as those are. All those do is they keep the door open for the spread of the gospel, for the spread of the truth. But every single one of us needs to get educated about the issue and go start preaching the gospel, because that's the path forward.
Yes, and I think this book is going to be very much a handbook for educators, for parents, for pastors, so that they can bring themselves up to speed quickly on where the church is, and also presumably to give them the arguments for the truth, which is what this is all about. John, Amen. Tell people where they can pick up a copy of this book, and also where they can find out more about your day-to-day work in the legal world.
Yeah, the book is published by Sophia Institute Press, and so you can find the book on their website. It's available for pre-order right now. It'll be released on August 15th, encouraging everyone to go out and get their copy early, because if we can get a requisite number of copies, then this becomes a best-selling book, and that'll just help spread the word so others can learn about this important subject from the church's perspective as well. And if you're interested in the cases that we're working on, adflegal.org is our website, and you'll be able to hear all about the sports cases, the bathroom cases, the pronoun cases, but many, many other cases too, including our pro-life cases and how we work to preserve innocent human life around the world.
John, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to come on air this morning and speak to us about this very important subject, and a very topical one too.
Thank you. God bless.
Okay, when we come back, we will be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and all these issues, we'll be praying for them. We'll be praying for John and his work as well. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio.